Impact. Ford Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. 9 months, Dan said, speaking breathily in disbelief. Months! Timo nodded. It was the nod of a defeated man. 2 questions, Emma said. 1, is this data absolutely infallible? And 2, how many people know about it?
The data becomes firmer with every passing minute, Timo said. But Alessandro was a man of science, and the words he chose to convey the impact probability, even at this early stage, were effectively 100%. As for your second question, at this point I'd say the number is probably around 10.
Probably, she parroted. And probably around 10? So by the time you wake me up, the horse is already bolted?
Emma, I just found out. These people are astronomers, not politicians, and one observer can be wrong. Multiple observers at one facility can be wrong. Alessandro showed this to his colleagues, people you've met. And when they told him he wasn't crazy, they asked staff at some of our other facilities to perform their own observations and analysis. Only then, when it became decisive, did he bring this to me. But politicians or not, everyone who works in my facilities understands the importance of a delicate touch here. The news won't have left those facilities. Not yet.
Not yet, Dan echoed. Exactly. This isn't the kind of thing we could keep secret if we wanted to, and it's not the kind of thing we should try to keep secret.
Emma was nodding.
That's not even an option. But there are certain ways for bad news to come out, and seriously, when the news is this bad, the way it comes out can be the difference between sporadic riots and the total collapse of society.
Right, but there is a distinction to be made, Timo said. There is a difference between passing this information on to people who can use it and announcing it to the public without any thought for what happens next. If Godfrey had found this before we did, or if NASA had found something like it a few years ago, they would have begun preparations long before the public found out. Of course, there is a chance of amateur observation, and of course that becomes inevitable as time passes. But for as long as possible, preparations must be carried out under the radar. This is a case where early public knowledge could be absolutely fatal for public safety. If this is on the news in a few hours, I fear that we are done for. Chaos in the streets, looting and rioting, shelves empty, banks closed, utter lawlessness when the police and security forces stop turning up for work, since money means nothing if there's not even going to be a world in 9 months. Just absolute anarchy. So, Dan, do you see why not everyone can know about this? At least for now.
Obviously, Dan said. But you literally just said that we have 9 months and need 3 years. What are you going to prepare, a seating plan for who gets to sit in the front row when this thing crashes into us?
I estimated that we'd need 3 years to prevent an impact, Timo clarified. You already know that I have paid attention to this kind of thing over the past year, the field of planetary defense. But there are distinctions to be made between avoidance, mitigation, and all manner of other measures. Unfortunately, unless the GSC has a lot more than I think, physical interception is completely off the table.
Dan, who had always been interested in this kind of thing, already firmly suspected that the timescale was too short for a Hollywood-style mission to take out the comet before it got too close. Emma, who had seen all of those movies, was immediately reminded of a conversation between Timo and Billy Kendrick on Focus 2020, in which Billy had specifically mentioned a long-period comet as being amongst the likeliest extinction-level threats that could emerge when it was too late to act. Being reluctant to spread fear, Emma hadn't liked the fact that they had talked about such things, and now that those fears had been proven well-founded, she liked it even less. And although she was no defeatist, if the chance of doing anything effective in 9 months was as slim as Dan seemed to think, then Emma couldn't see how a 9-month societal descent into apocalyptic chaos was any better than having no warning at all. In her professional opinion, it seemed only too likely that the mere revelation of the comet's approach could destroy humanity long before the impact had a chance. 9 years would have been doable. 9 seconds would have been merciful. 9 months would be hell. But, Timo went on, even with only 9 months, there are certain things we can do. Dig, for one.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if significant emergency bunkers already exist in this country and elsewhere, but I can certainly try to either expand those or construct our own. The alternative to going down is going up. I'm not going to pretend that I've looked into this particular option very much, but it seems reasonable to explore whether we could survive within Earth's atmosphere if we were in a high-altitude vessel on the other side of the world when the impact hit, to see out the worst of it. Dan shook his head, almost imperceptibly. Timo's heart was always in the right place, but Dan couldn't so easily turn his mind towards solutions that could, at best, save a tiny portion of the world's population.
How long until we can see it with just our eyes?
Emma asked.
I didn't ask, Timo said. Perhaps something like 4 months? But I would be stunned if it's not independently observed long before naked eye observation becomes possible. You're the expert, and something tells me this isn't going to be up to either of us, anyway.
But my take would be that the public has to find out through official channels so the message can be managed. It then becomes a trade-off of how long to wait. The ideal time is as long as possible before an amateur astronomer spots it. Even a month would give us some time to get around a table, us being my staff and all the old NASA, ESA, CNSA, and Roscosmos teams at the GSC. And that would at least give us a chance to talk about how to keep things stable while we pursue whatever we can pursue. Alessandro was waiting for me to give him the green light to bring some GSC personnel in on this, because they, and only they, have access to any space-based observational equipment. The major telescopes can be pointed towards it, and distant probes can be redirected towards it to give us more information about its composition, which is going to be crucial if we have any chance at all. We're way past politics now, and we really do need to bring them in on this, ASAP. So, green light? Emma nodded. Dan?
Go for it, he said.
But even I know there's no such thing as being past politics. The comet could be 5 minutes away and those idiots would be arguing about who gets to give the last speech. Timo heeded their argument, sending a brief text message to Alessandro to authorize the sharing of his observational data with high-ranking GSC officials who reported directly to Chairman Godfrey.
What about the plaque?
Dan asked when Timo was finished. He aimed the question at no one in particular.
Are we going to tell anyone else how Alessandro knew where to look?
Not yet, Emma answered simply and decisively. One thing at a time. Dan was glad to hear this answer, both parts. As the initial gut-wrenching shock of the comet news had begun to sink in, his mind had started wondering about the nature of the plaque's message. The previous year, those optimists who didn't see the first two plaques as warnings of a potentially disastrous rendezvous with an asteroid or comet argued that it made little sense to think that the messengers would care enough to warn the citizens of Earth, but not enough to protect them. The technology required to traverse the stars and deliver a series of plaques implied an ability to shunt off course or otherwise disturb a would-be impactor, they argued. And as such, the warning hypothesis made little sense. Those plaques were fake, as Dan McCarthy knew only too well. But the fourth plaque, only too real, brought up the same question in his mind. Why would they warn us when they could save us? Even more perplexing was how the messenger's stated doctrine of minimal necessary intervention fitted into this. It struck Dan as fairly obvious that the most minimal intervention in this case would have been no intervention at all, and that the fact one had been deemed necessary clearly implied that the messengers had deemed humanity worthy of protection. The problem, thus, was logically circular. It also struck Dan that even assuming humanity had been deemed worth protecting, and that intervention was thus necessary, preventing a potentially catastrophic impact without alerting humanity would have been considerably less invasive and destabilizing, i.e., more minimal, than alerting humanity of a problem it had insufficient time to deal with. In turn, this consideration of the timescale raised yet another question. Why the hell did they leave the warning so late?
I'm with Emma on that, Timo said. The plaque has to wait. It's done its part, and for now we've done ours. I'm sure we'll hear from Alessandro in the next few hours as updates come in.
Emma sat down again as a ponderous silence circled.
I'm glad we know, she said, breaking it very suddenly. It's better to know. And we're definitely telling Clark and Tara, Dan said, looking at Timo as he spoke.
Definitely, Emma concurred.
Timo gave a half-nod, half-shrug. He didn't look too concerned either way, and knew he would have been outvoted by Emma and Dan and powerless to stop them anyway.
So what's it called? Dan asked.
Comet Bonucci, after Alessandro?
For the first time since arriving, Timo broke into a slight smile.
No, he wanted nothing to do with it.
Do you remember Luisa and Francesco from your time at the Cavalieri Observatory?
Luisa Conti, the observatory's director, and Francesco Abate, its senior researcher?
They were the first to corroborate Alessandro's findings, so it's going into the books as Comet Conte Abate. Unofficially, Alessandro has christened it Il Diavolo.
I'm guessing that means the devil in Italian?
Dan said, half asking.
You guess correctly, Timo confirmed. Il Diavolo is the most potent foe of all.
The silence that followed this statement lasted far longer than any before it. Dan sat down next to Emma before long. Her head rested on his shoulder as soon as he did.
Do you think we should wake Tara and Clark to tell them now? He asked.
No,
Emma said, speaking very quietly as she listened to his heartbeat.
I know I said it's better to know, but there's literally nothing either of those two can do about this, so we might as well let them have a few more hours. Ignorance is bliss and all that.
Timo stood awkwardly next to the couch. Dan, do you mind if I go back to the basement?
Knock yourself out, Dan said. But if you see Clark, don't let on. I'm telling him.
Understood. And Emma, I'm sorry to have woken you at this hour. Needs must, as they say.
Emma almost let out a slight laugh at Timo's unexpected apology.
Don't worry about it.
And with that, Timo was gone. After a few minutes of thinking Emma had fallen asleep on his shoulder, Dan felt his own eyes closing.
They're not really going to leave us all to die, she suddenly said, jolting them open again.
Are they?
No,
Dan replied, gently kissing the top of her head.
We know what they told us at Lolo, and we know they're on our side. If something like this doesn't merit a decisive intervention, I don't know whatever could.
Dan was desperate to believe his own words, but they sounded a lot more convincing to Emma's ears than his own.